Nation.
Roland Smith here with Carl Sabatino. This is Smith Sabatino on the Envision Radio Networks. We have as a guest, Carl, right now, Rick Braccadoro. He's president and CEO of WIBG Enviro Radio in Atlantic City, New Jersey. He is a longtime radio broadcaster, a journalist, and certainly has a number of opinions on how our industry has changed over the past few years. So welcome, Rick. Thank you for being with us.
Well, Roland, thank you very much for having me. And Carl, thank you.
Thank you. Pleasure having you on the show.
All right. We've already discussed in our first five-minute segment the issue of Brian Williams. We may pick that in and up as we go along. But you and I, Rick, have had a brief discussion on the telephone as to how our industry has changed. Would you like to give me a synopsis of how you think it has changed over the past, let's say, 20, 30 years?
Well, sure, Roland. Thank you very much. The industry itself has morphed from what was informational radio to entertainment radio, and exclusively entertainment radio. And that division has also saturated the world of news and information, or as it's known today. Back in the 60s and 70s, it was primarily full-service, full-spectrum broadcast, radio and TV. And as you know, obviously in those days, there was a lot of variety and a lot of programs that were talk-based. But they had a different flavor. And the days of once we began to move into the 70s and 80s, there was a move to begin the concept of a 24-hour news cycle. Several New York stations obviously went news in the 60s, and then through the 70s and 80s, it began to change even into more aggressive 24-hour cycles. But as far as the industry itself is concerned, Roland, as you know, it has become more of a celebrity-focused interview program format in many respects, and in a lot of ways, it just doesn't have what I consider to be the honest resilience of what radio and broadcast was meant to be.
I would agree with everything that you've said, but can you give me, do you think there's a cause? Is it Wall Street?
Wall Street certainly has a major impact, and Roland, as you and I have discussed before, back in the days of when radio was owned by moms and pops, they were independent owners, they had their own little facility, and they operated. But in the 70s and the early 70s, and then progressing on to the 70s and 80s, a lot of multinational corporations began popping up, which were really American companies that saw a market worldwide. But at the same time, in parallel to that, radio station owners were moving into, and other broadcast entities were moving into corporate entities. More corporations were buying into and taking over these local stations and regional stations. And as you know, they've become, in many respects, Wall Street has taken over Main Street. And as a result, we have an industry now that's controlled primarily by corporate. My wife and I, are the last sole proprietor broadcasters in New Jersey. And as we look back into our 22 years of ownership, we've seen it changed even more and more aggressively in those years. Because now what you have is a corporate mentality. Let's back this up just a little bit into the late 80s, early 90s, when the multinationals began saturating the broadcast industry and then making one IT center for 50 radio stations. Where do you get live and local? It no longer existed. It's just a computer with a gang of computers around it and IT specialists. So that's really not, as I see it, not serving the community. Matter of fact, I had this discussion with Ajit Pai. As you know, Ajit has made some real headlines recently on the internet and the net neutrality issue. But he agrees that what's happened is, in many respects, the industry and those organizations that support our industry have redefined live and local. They haven't a clue as to what live and local really is. And so as a result, they've morphed into something that looks like live radio, but in most cases they're soundtracks or voice tracks, and they have really no relevance to the local communities in which they are licensed to.
Rick,
so it's changed, you know.
Rick, for those of us, and I worked with CNN in its very, very beginning with Ted Turner. I remember the arguments I had with Bob Pace and Gillespie and Turner with reference to the credibility of the journalistic effort.
Yes.
This goes back to the early 80s and late 70s, and when we started that operation. The point was is that they were looking to define the difference between entertainment and journalism and news. And somehow, as you noted earlier on in your comments, that's been morphed together. Give me your thoughts, if you would, please, on that morphing. The term being a journalist has now become more of an entertainment provider, at least in my opinion, where many of these people get on. They're pretty, don't know a heck of a lot about the topic. They read up on it before they go on, and then they're able to spew very nicely in very correct English some words about this or that. That's not journalism. Give me your thoughts about that, please.
Very, very well put, Carl. As a matter of fact, what we've seen are pretty faces and people who really are nothing more than prompter readers. They really have no knowledge base. They're paper thin. And I'm not saying that as a general statement, because there are specifically some very good ones. Now, Rollin was my hero through the 70s, 80s when he was with CBS and still maintains integrity.
He's still a hell of a guy. He really is.
I'll give you the $20 later, though, Rollin. But the truth to be told, if you look at the kind of concise journalism that Rollin delivers and continues to, and delivered even in the CBS days, it was news with integrity. It had value because it really did define who, what, when, where, why, and how of a story, and he wouldn't let it go until the story was complete. The problem today is everybody tells us, and I hear this all the time, because WIBG is now the only radio station in the Atlantic Cape area that, in fact, does live, local, proactive news, and it takes time to aggregate. It takes time to get out there and talk to the people, the movers and the shakers. And nobody, and I'm telling you, nobody wants to do that anymore. That definition has been lost. And I've been told by consultants, you don't have to do news. Oh, you don't have to serve that. Well, maybe you don't think so, but I know that that's what my license says I'm to do. And frankly, the corporations have so subjugated radio into this one IT center that it's impossible for them to ever serve a local community.
Well, you know, Rick, thank you very much for those very kind words. But I remember back in the CBS days, and you have to bear in mind that was long before the 600-channel universe. New York, the major number one market in the United States, had basically five television stations and a whole bunch of radio stations. And all of us in the television side of the New York media at that time probably did. I remember covering stories, but I had sometimes 2, 3, 4, sometimes 5 minutes to tell the story. Today, you're going to get no story longer than a minute 40. And I don't think you can tell a day's worth of world, national, and local events in a combination or a whole bunch of 1 minute and 40 seconds.
You're absolutely right, Rollin. The trouble is everyone has been so conditioned, if you will, for a 15-second soundbite that you're supposed to get all of this data, all of this valued information in 15 seconds. It's impossible. And I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Well, we want to continue with this and stay with us, Rick. We've still got some time to talk on this particular segment, but I'd like to see if I can hold you over for the next segment, too.
Sure.
Okay. Back to your point, you said that you had a conversation with an FCC commissioner, correct?
Yes. It's quite interesting because the genesis of what we've seen in the industry is driven by the engineering factors and the technologies. And back in the 60s, AM, as you know, AM radio was the top at the top of the chart. FM could hold no traction. It had been around for about 10 or 15 years, and it could hold no traction. So in the mid-60s, when FM was trying its best to make a go at it, and New York started, and the major markets did, they had a problem because they could not get the audience to gravitate to the FM dial.
You know, if you can hold, Rick, I want you to hold your thought, gravitate to the FM dial, and we'll go back and talk about that in just a minute or so. But we need, as all stations have to do, we have to take a break at a particular given time. And that's Carl's responsibility.
and he never lets me forget it, Rick. This is Carl Sabatino with Roland Smith. This is America Weekend on the Envision Radio Network. Please, ladies and gentlemen, stay with us. Rick Brancadoro will stay with us into the next segment. We're back. Please.
Now, Cheap Psych Tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. The economy may be improving, but stores are back to their old tricks to get your cash. Here's the advertising science of it. In difficult times, people feel vulnerable, and stores twist this inferiority to their gain. It's called rebound buying. And if you've been out of funds, but now you have some cash, chances are you'll waste it on unwanted product. Why? Advertisers subtly point out inadequacies you've been feeling, and their product gives you a way out, a way to feel better. Most will give up their bucks, buy unwanted products just to feel better. What's the cheap psychological trick? To resist rebound spending, count your cash. Physically look at it. Talk to it. Imagine yourself having more, and this I want more belief will help you resist buying temptations. Got a question? Contact me at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.
Think green.
Harrison with you. The USDA has released a report causing a lot of eyebrows to go up because it's about the condition of America's meat supply. The USDA's own Food Safety and Inspection Service found that a lot of America's meat is tainted with veterinary drugs, bug killers and pesticides, and radioactive heavy metals. Further, the report shows that this meat is regularly being approved for sale, much of which ends up in school lunchrooms where it's casually fed to our children. As much as many of us hate government so-called interference, this is precisely what we need government to regulate and watchdog for us. It further turns out that the USDA actually knows why the meat supply is tainted and is even allowing toxic meat onto the store shelves because big business has even bigger control over our current government. From the Greeniverse.
Think Green with Harrison at GoHarrison.com.